The Big Wake Up by Mark Coggins is what you hope every private eye novel will be, says Edgar Award-winning author Megan Abbott. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 21, The Big Wake Up. I rummaged in the toolbox for two pairs of work gloves, one of which I passed over to Chris. I'm not sure I care for your Sleeping Beauty analogy. Are you prepared to deliver the wake-up kiss? Chris pulled on the gloves.
Yuck. I take mine with a Y chromosome. What are these for?
To protect your manicure and avoid fingerprints. I tugged on my gloves and directed Chris to stand with me by the side of the door with the deadbolt. We braced ourselves against the wall of the vestibule and each placed a foot along the edge of the canted door. Then we kicked out. The deadbolt pulled out of the strike box, and the door flopped onto the granite tiles with a scabious clatter. I hoped the security guard was safely out of earshot in a Dunkin' Donuts. I retrieved the flashlight and shone it around the interior of the chamber. It wasn't much larger than a walk-in closet. There were two caskets in a bunk bed arrangement along the back wall, and two more on a platform in the center of the chamber. Niches on either side held several cremation urns. There was a thick coating of dust over everything, and mold and water stains on the floor. Pale, stringy roots, like exposed nerve endings, insinuated themselves through cracks in the ceiling. Moist air with an odor like rotting vegetables wafted out to us.
Lovely,
said Chris. Do you know who the Morgenstern family residents were? I asked. Maybe we can eliminate some possibilities.
I'm pretty sure we can skip the urns.
Thank you for that.
There was a list in the article I read. We have Grandpa and Grandma.
Who must be along the back wall.
An aunt, an uncle, and two cousins, and before Joel kicked them out, Mom and Pop.
So if Evita's here, she's probably in one of the coffins in front.
Seems reasonable, but which one?
I walked up to the caskets and tried to brush as much of the dust off them as I could. The one on the left was wooden, with tarnished brass fittings. The one on the right, pewter-colored metal with silver trim. The metal one seemed to be locked or fastened in some way. The lid to the wooden one creaked open an inch when I tried to lift it. I looked back at Chris. I guess we're trying this one first. Chris gave the slightest of nods.
I guess you are.
I thrust the lid upward and pointed the flashlight inside. It was not what I would call a picturesque view. Hair and eyebrows had turned to dust, skin had darkened and receded, and bones from cheek and nose protruded like boulders in mud. I couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman, but if it was Evita, then even Isis couldn't restore her. I put the lid down gently and reckoned that my phobia of embalmed bodies had been burned out of me forever.
Well?
Asked Chris, who seemed to be making a careful study of his shoe. Scratch one. I moved to the pewter casket and poked the flashlight around the seams. At a point about a quarter way down, just beneath the lid, there was a hole the size of a dime that looked like it would accept a key or a crank of some sort. I put the light into the hole. It was no more than an inch long, and at the end of it was a hexagonal socket. Grab me that set of Allen wrenches from the toolbox, I said.
What's an Allen wrench?
Look for the L-shaped bars with seven sides. Chris shifted through the items within the toolkit and came up with a plastic packet with 30 or so wrenches. I tried the second largest one, found that it was too big, and dropped down to the next smallest size, which fit perfectly. I gave it a twist. After some initial resistance, something clicked inside the casket, and I felt gears moving as I turned the wrench. I wound it as far as it would go. A mechanism shifted, and the lid seemed to pop up from the base, riding a little higher on its rubber seal. I dropped the wrench in my pocket and switched the flashlight over to my right hand. "Now's the time to step back if you're not sure we've got the real deal," I said.
"No,"
said Chris.
"I feel good about this one."
I grasped the handle of the lid and pushed it up, but in doing so, managed to bump the flashlight against the supporting platform. It slipped from my hand and went out. It hardly mattered. The violet glow coming from the body lying on the sparkling ivory pillow gave off enough light to show it was perfectly preserved.
"It's her,"
said Chris.
"It's really her."
She was dressed in the same smartly tailored blue suit as the mannequin in the China Basin warehouse, and she had the same golden rosary clutched in her hands. Her hair was in the same chignon, and she was wearing the same signet ring. But whereas I thought the mannequin was merely pretty without being beautiful, I couldn't say the same about this Evita. She was angelic, iconic, a Madonna sculpture in the flesh. I reached out to touch the skin of her hand, wanting to make sure I hadn't fallen for another duplicate. The skin was cold, but it didn't have the rubbery feel of before. It was softer than any woman's, than any human's, I'd ever touched. "There's something very wrong about this," I said. "Why is she glowing?" Chris clutched my arm.
"I read about this. The doctor who worked on her, Dr. Ara, had a special embalming technique."
"Special? Is that another word for radioactive?" Chris gave me a shove.
"No, you Philistine. He must have put a luminescent material in the embalming fluid."
"Thank you, Mr. Science. Next, explain why ice floats." I reached down to pick up the flashlight. The bulb wasn't broken, so I tried tapping it against the side of the platform to restore the circuit. The light snapped back on. "We can debate this later," I said. "Right now, I think we better get Evita packed up before the guard makes his next round." Chris eyed the casket.
"Do you think you and I can handle this? It's got to weigh a couple hundred pounds at least."
"More like 300 or 400, and the answer is no. I don't think we can handle it. There's a clean drop cloth in the back of the Escalade. Would you run and grab it?"
"Why do I have to do all the step and fetching?"
"Because I'm doing all the coffin opening, and put the back seats down while you're at it." Chris came back with the cloth, and we took turns lifting Evita's head and feet to shift it underneath. We folded the cloth over the top of her and then grabbed the ends, me at the head and Chris at the feet. "On three," I said. I counted to three and we hefted. Evita's weight was more than manageable. We almost flung her into the air. We struggled over the gate and around to the back of the SUV, which Chris had not so conveniently parked head in. He scrambled up into the cargo area, and we laid Evita out in the back. Chris pulled the cloth down to start futzing with the body, refolding her arms, repositioning the rosary, until I tugged on his jacket. "Come on," I said. "We don't have time for that. There's more work to do." We retrieved all the tools from the vestibule and interior of the mausoleum, and then I directed Chris to one side of the fallen door, while I took the other. "I want to prop it back in place," I said.
"Whatever for. They're going to discover the break-in eventually."
"We need to buy time. If ISIS or any of the other players opens the paper tomorrow morning and finds an article about a mysterious grave robbery in Oakland, it'll force our hand. I'd rather have them thinking she's still in play." The door weighed much more than Evita, but considerably less than her coffin. We got it upright and inched it across the doorway by tugging on the handle. Standing in front of it, it was clear the door was resting on the ground, but it was hard to detect from the other side of the gate. It was 9:45 by the time we piled into the Escalade and directed it back towards the entrance of the cemetery. The lock on the gate was a little harder to reach from the other side, but having picked it once, I was able to line up all the pins and tease it open well before the guard's next patrol. On a whim, we parked near a flower shop by the gate and waited for him to show. He arrived at 10:05 on the dot, left a cup of coffee steaming on the roof of his car while he reopened the much-abused lock, retrieved the coffee, and went on his merry way. "Congratulations, Chris," I said. "You've just snatched your first body." Chris glanced over his shoulder into the cargo space.
"And what a body. It's like throwing a pinch hitter on your first game out."
"I believe you mean no hitter, but thanks for trying."
"What's next, then?"
"Isn't it obvious? Time to take you and your new roommate home." You have been listening to The Big Wake Up, a book Publishers Weekly described as outstanding in a starred review. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.